The 0-2 pitch, swing and a miss, knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball.
It's Wednesday, January 13th, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chesko. And, Chet, things have been a little quiet around the NovaCare Complex this week regarding the coaching search. The Ghost missed a couple games, or tonight will be his second game, with an injury for the Flyers. Your 76ers are still sitting on four wins, and the Phillies are only about 5 weeks away from spring training, so there's plenty of Philly sports to still talk about.
Yeah, the Flyers, Bill, have gained a little ground of late in their playoff push as they reach the midpoint of their season tonight, in fact. We'll talk about the orange and black, but of course the Birds head coach search is the big topic this week, and we will get heavily into that.
Well, I wanted to get your thoughts on this Tom Coughlin coming in to interview with the Eagles, and you buying or selling on that possibility.
In a nutshell, I am definitely not a fan of that scenario. But just in the 2 hours leading up to our show, I'm hearing some major speculation now about Coughlin's offensive coordinator, Ben McAdoo, perhaps being the Eagles' choice, and you know, maybe even some sort of an announcement in the next day or two. That's according to a couple of media outlets, so we will certainly keep our eyes and ears on that and talk more about that prospect.
Well, we're going to sort it all out with our special guest making his return appearance to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, Eagles pre- and post-game analyst Kevin Riley. And we're certainly going to ask Kevin this question about Tom Coughlin and see where he stands on it, if he's a buyer or a seller. Kevin, welcome back, and glad to have you as always.
Bill and Chet, it's really good to be with you guys, and it's a crazy time. The Eagles seem to be now 12 months a year the lead story on sports these days.
Yes, indeed.
Well, hey, Kevin, it's always great talking to you, and let's just go ahead and get started right where I left off with Chet there and get your thoughts on Tom Coughlin. First of all, leaving the Giants and his press conference and then turning right around and getting an interview in division. It's kind of a really strange situation to a heck of a coach.
Yeah, this is really a strange situation, you know, all around as far as the interviewing process going. Very little information really coming from the right sources. You had a lot of media people, sports media people talking about it. They sense this, they sense that. Not really having any sources come out. So we'll go through that, but to directly answer your question, at first I thought it was a little absurd, this guy just being such a competitor of ours over the years, you know, didn't lend itself to that. But, you know, I can remember Coughlin when he was here with the Eagles. I can remember that he did a great job at Boston College. The Carolina Panthers, I think it was the third year he had him in the playoffs. This guy brought process to the NFL. Like maybe no other coach with the exception of Belichick. And I think that he still has some fire in his belly, but he is 69 years old. And if you're trying and looking for your next Andy Reid, who will be around, you know, 5 to 8 years, he's certainly not the guy you want. But I think he could probably steer the ship for 1 or 2 years. And if you remember the fact that he brought a expansion team from zero to being competitive in 3 years, he might be a good guy to have build a team for you. I also wonder if outside of being the head coach, if he would accept, an offensive coordinator job or something like that, an assistant coaching job. So it's been really, really strange, guys. And, you know, you look through, here's some of the stuff that I've heard within the last hour. The Eagles do not have another head coaching interview set up going forward. That doesn't mean they won't still have one. And I just keep wondering why Sean McDermott has disappeared from the conversation. Maybe we'll know that someday. And you take a look at Doug Peterson in the mix, McAdoo. You got Coughlin. The thing with McAdoo and Coughlin, I'm sorry, with Coughlin and Peterson and even Deuce Staley, these are three guys that aren't even been mentioned in any other head coaching job position. So you kind of wonder how deep the talent is out there, and the Eagles are obviously taking their time to evaluate it. Jeff Laurie had a weak head start in everybody, but it doesn't seem to matter right now.
Yeah, Kevin, I mentioned the Ben McAdoo report. Maybe he is their guy. What do you know about Ben McAdoo? Of course, he's been the OC with the Giants the last few years. He also was in Green Bay earlier with Aaron Rodgers. He's young. I think he's only 38. What do you know about Ben McAdoo?
I don't know that much about him, although I will tell you, I don't think the Giants helped him or Coughlin with as the general manager up there with getting them any kind of influx of talent in the last 3 years, with the exception of Beckham and maybe, one or two other players that started. They certainly didn't shore him up, with receivers outside of Beckham. And defensively, they've been one of the worst teams, in the league. So the only thing I can say about McAdoo, he seemed to really have resurrected, Manning's quarterbacking situation. I think that Eli had one of his best years ever from the standpoint of yards and pass completions, and that's with not much talent. So I got to give the guy some credit there, for bringing that team around a little bit. I don't know what else to say about him except that, I wonder if Pat Shurmur might still be in the picture, either as head coach or offensive coordinator. These are things that have been, tossed around all week by the media and a little bit of information that creeps out from here or there. Adam Schechter claims that McAdoo is the lead guy right now for the Eagles, but he said that's not a source, that's just a sense. And, I wouldn't be surprised if that got announced tomorrow, McAdoo being named head coach, and I wouldn't be totally shocked if it was Pat Shurmur. I just think that Shurmur may be part of the old guard that they're trying to get rid of there, but Pat certainly has a lot of the players that would play for him, and he certainly has a very, very good handle on the offense. I think what you saw in that last game is what he has been wanting to do for two or three years, and his hands have been tied because it was all Chip's calls.
Yep.
I always thought when this thing started that we would see Sean McDermott as the head coach, reunited with Pat Shurmur, the offensive coordinator, two young guys that could possibly be there for 5 or 6 or 7 years and could work, hand in hand together. Somehow the McDermott thing has fallen apart, and we haven't even heard his name mentioned in the last week or so.
Yeah, that's a mystery to me. He was my first choice as soon as Kelly got the boot. I said Sean McDermott is my number one guy, and the Eagles don't even seem to be interested at all in him, which is very surprising. So, yeah, if there is an announcement in the next day, I would think it would have to be either McAdoo or Shurmur, but we shall see. Hey, we'll circle back to this in just a minute, Kevin, but I wanted to ask you something else before we continue with the coaching search. I remember that the night Chip Kelly was given the heave-ho, you had quite a bit to say about it on Facebook in terms of Chip's arrogance and stubbornness. It sounded to me like you were okay with Jeffrey Lurie's decision.
Yeah, I really was. And, and one of the quotes I made on my Facebook page, which, I do a lot of motivational speaking and, and I do some leadership clinics and stuff. And the one thing that I have found in my 30 years working with, the Xerox Corporation and watching leaders like Don Shula and Coach Dick Vermeil and guys that really are good leaders is, and Dick, this is a quote from Dick, and it's I know that he stole it from somebody else, but people really don't care about how much you know until people know about how much you care. And in almost in any leadership position that I've been in or have watched people that have been successful in, if you don't care somewhat for your people, you can be a hard taskmaster, but if you don't have that empathy level for, the common man when he's going through a difficult time and you think you're above everyone and you can't talk to people on a daily basis and just say hello, you are not going to get people to run through walls for you. People will be able to be successful leaders from time to time through the fear principle, but it won't be for long. And that was the point I was trying to make. I heard very early on, from guys that I do the pregame and postgame show, but I heard from internal sources, because I've been doing that for 16 years up there, that Chip could pass you in the hallway and not acknowledge your existence, not nod to you, not say hello. And, maybe that's just a quirk with him, that he's so obsessed with what's on his mind that he doesn't see you. But that certainly tends to really make people feel like they're not appreciated. And I think that that team came in there initially and really bought everything he was saying. But if you're not, you know, living those standards of, you know, really caring about your people, they start to wonder if you're leading them down the wrong track. And that's where I think he really lost the football team, is he just became very, very arrogant. The guy was very successful, and that will happen. And it was going to be his way or the highway. I do know that Pat Shurmur, for this, at least this year, would give him 9 to 10 plays that he thought might be beneficial in the offensive game plan, and they were never called upon.
Wow.
And I'm not going to tell you how I know that, but I know it. And then the last game, I was not surprised at all. In 3 days, there were a couple wrinkles that Pat put in that obviously worked very well. So that's the sort of thing that if Chip, I think he could be a good football coach, but he's going to have to learn that he's got to deal, you know, in a personal relationship with people and make them feel like they count in the organization if he's going to lead them, especially in the NFL. And I'm not surprised if you get away with that in college, because in 4 years, people are with you and they're gone, and they're younger people. And, you know, these were men in the NFL, and they just weren't buying his act.
Yeah, you know, Kevin, speaking of Chip, I just heard on the news in out of Tampa that there are 3 finalists that they're throwing around. One is Chip Kelly, the other Mike Shanahan, and the third one, Dirk Cutter, the present offensive coordinator. It's just funny to me, you know, the personnel issues, we all know about that. But it seemed to me that as a little time went on, the defensive coordinator certainly caught up to what Chip was doing. I question Chip the football coach nearly as much as I question Chip the general manager. His offense had no creativity.
I think you make a great point here. You know, it was obvious to me that the other teams were picking up, and as this especially happened in the last 5 or 6 games, that after the Eagles would come down the field and move the ball on their first 1 or 2 possessions, and they got very good at doing it in the last part of the season, that everything would be shut down. And you'd watch the – I started to watch from the box, my perch at the stadium. I started to watch the defensive players come off the field after, you know, playing against the Eagles offense, and huddled around the defensive coaches with pictures of the offense. And I believe in hearing some of the rumors coming out of the opposing locker rooms that they knew from formations what the plays were going to be. And, you know, if you think about it, you know, that offense that they run from the sideline, it can't be that complicated to get all 11 guys on the same page and run it very quickly like that. So I think you're absolutely right, and I just don't know what happened to Chip the risk taker. You know, we thought we're going to see the 2-point conversion, you know, a lot more than we saw it. This guy took risks on 4th down. He didn't do a bad job with that in the NFL, but hardly, rarely ever a trick play. You know, and I'm not one to run an offense on trick plays, but I'll tell you what, back in the day when I was playing, the Dallas Cowboys would run one trick play almost every game, if not every other game. And then we had to work against what if in practice. It took practice away from the time that we should have been spending on the rest of their offense. But, you know, a play like that can burn you so bad that you have to start to do what ifs. And that plays into the heads of a lot of guys that are playing defensively. I think they became very predictable guys. And I think that if he's going to learn something, you can get away with that in college where they only have a week to prepare against you and some, you know, college coaches that aren't quite putting in the hours in that the NFL coaches are. But I think he found out you can't get away with it in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think it was Patrick Peterson after that Arizona debacle said that after the first 15 plays, we knew exactly what they were going to run.
Well, and you know, I got reports from the sideline that said that in the first couple of games that were at home, that the opposing players were yelling the plays into the defense. They were watching the formations and yelling them into the defense. So there's got to be some credibility to that. And that's what I think when you saw a little bit about what Shurmur could do, he really mixed it up a little bit there. And I think I would like to see what he could do given the whole 9 yards. I really would.
so, Kevin, maybe we'll get a new head coach in the next couple of days. And then we got to figure out who the quarterback will be. What's your take on Sam Bradford, and what is the likelihood he'll be back as an Eagle, or will that depend on who the coach is?
Well, I think both. Number one, Bradford would like to stay here. And for one of the reasons that he has said he would like to stay in Philadelphia, he loves the town, number one. And he doesn't want to go to a new team and learn a new offense and a new system. And I'm not so sure that some of that won't happen, whoever they bring as coach here. But I think a lot that he's sitting back right now saying, I'm going to see who's going to be the head coach, if I'm going to like a system, if they're going to change everything. I think that's going to have a lot to do with his decision, you know, to be a free agent and go elsewhere. However, I think the Eagles would be crazy not to franchise him that if it came down to that, because I don't know who else he'd go out and look for right now. I think Bradford's a pretty darn good quarterback. I think he got better with each game, especially when he came back off the injury this year. And I really think that he's probably one of the better quarterbacks after. I'd like to see what he can do for another year. If I was a GM, I would definitely franchise him for a year, and I would try to get a young quarterback to back him up and work with him, and then go from there, because I'm looking at what's available out there and what's available in the draft. And I'm not, I don't think you could be competitive taking another stab at a quarterback at this point in time.
Yeah, I'm with you right there, Kevin. I don't want to see Mark Sanchez and some rookie next year, because then you're just really starting from scratch, and I don't want to do that. It was a rough year for the Eagles, but what players impressed you or pleasantly surprised you this past season?
Well, guys are pleasantly surprised me. I got to tell you, the guy at the top of my list is Darren Sproles. I don't know how he continues to do it game in game, year after year, 32 years old. But he did a really nice job this year. The shocker for me was Jordan Hicks, the inside middle linebacker that came in. And, you know, that's the spots that I'll watch guys playing. And, you know, here are guys, not a first or second round pick, but he comes in. Really because of injuries, and just starts playing like he's been playing the position. He's playing it tough. He's playing it quick. He's smart. He doesn't make mistakes. Almost, guys, too good to be true. I wanted to see him play some more games, and this was the big, hit on him coming out of college, is that he was a little bit of an injury risk. He got injured a little bit in college and might not be as durable to hold up, especially to his size. He's not real big. He's not real heavy. But, boy, he's got some skills that I think they wish they had in Marcus Smith. Now, that's another situation. I'm wondering right now, after watching Marcus come in the last game and playing a little bit, he didn't look that bad. I'm just wondering if he was just a scapegoat in all of this because he was Hallie's pick and, Chip was trying to send a message. But it's something when you're a first-round draft pick, especially a linebacker or a wide receiver, can't get on the field to play special teams and you're dressing them. There's something wrong there.
Smith was mixing it up a little bit.
Yeah, I thought so. So those two guys right there impressed me. I think Jordan Matthews is the real deal. I think he'll get better year in and year out. And some of the young defensive backs, I think Eric Rowe is going to be a good one. But he got thrown in there and they didn't give him a whole lot of help. And I thought he did a pretty good job, all things considering. But I think they got some good core people in there. Lane Johnson needs to keep his mouth shut, but he plays pretty good right tackle. And I think Kelsey, if they surround him with two better guards than they have, but they've got to build that offensive lineup a little bit. I think their running back situation is in good shape. I think Murray's going to come back and show everybody that he was the back he could have been. And you saw a little bit of that when they're running him from. This is one of the things that Pat wanted to do was get Bradford under center once in a while. And when you don't do that once in a while, you really give up a play that I think is very, very crucial in the NFL, and that's quarterback sneak. Fourth and inches, it's really hard to stop fourth and inches with a quarterback that can just move forward. Like a guy like Tom Brady, who's not the youngest guy in the world, but he seems to get them 9 out of 10 times. But when you're constantly in that shotgun formation, you're not fooling anybody if you move up and go under center the only time you're going to run, fourth and one. So I think running backs are in pretty good shape. They've definitely got to spend some time, money, and resources to build up that offensive line. I think their defensive line is pretty good. And if they could just stay healthy at linebacker, I think they'll be all right.
Well, hey, Kevin, I wanted to actually, I was going to go kind of where you just went and looking toward the future, but thinking about Sean McDermott, you know, I know he interviewed for that Tampa job. Of course, Jason Lick, however you pronounce his name, is the GM who used to be with the Eagles when Sean was with the Eagles. And Sean was down here in Tampa and interviewed with Tampa already. But, you know, there's Jameis Winston, there's Mike Evans, there's some quality players at Tampa. And I just wonder, if you look at the big picture, if maybe the Eagles just don't have the talent for a guy like Sean McDermott to say, you know what, this is a job I want. Because it was gutted by Chip Kelly.
You make a good point, and I'd be lying to you if I told you I knew. But I got to know Sean a little bit. You know, he's a local guy. He was a tremendous high school wrestler at LaSalle High School. And I really liked the guy. His biggest problem when he became defensive coordinator was taking over after a legend in Jimmy Johnson. It's really hard to coach guys on any level, but especially the NFL, when you're younger than them and they're older than you. And, you know, following in Jimmy's footsteps, that team just wasn't buying his game plan like they bought Jimmy Johnson. So I think he was in a bad situation there. And then he goes down to Carolina, and I think he really helps Ron Rivera turn that, you know, team around. And here's another thing. I just like the Philly connection. The guy's a Philly guy. We've never had a guy that had Philly connections born and raised here. And I just thought, if I was going to be there, the little bit I know, because I don't know McAdoo. I don't know what the conversation they had with Coughlin. I don't know all that. But going into this thing, I thought, if I had to make a decision tomorrow, it would be Sean McDermott as the head coach working with offensive coordinator Pat Shurmur. And then I'd go from there and see what we could do.
Hey, Kevin, since I asked you who were the pleasant surprises, I have to ask you the obvious question. Who are the biggest disappointments? For me, it would be the wide receivers and DeMarco Murray. What about you?
Well, I'm going to give DeMarco Murray the benefit of the doubt that this system was really bad for him. But I really tell you, a guy that I think they really missed on as a consistent NFL player is Josh Huff. You know, he just did not do, and he has not been able to correct the mistakes he makes. He looks like he's got some really good, talent, but he's not able, to be a consistent ball player. Really disappointed in the play of Byron Maxwell, not so much from a standpoint of coverage. I think the guy's not a bad cover guy, but he doesn't want to tackle anybody. And I'm just, as a defensive guy, I want my cornerbacks and my safeties to be able to come up and hit people, and he's not a guy in that, arena. And, the other situations that I think that we really were hurting at was the offensive guards. Alan Barber and Matt Tobin just didn't, and Dennis Kelly just could not do the job. I'm not sure that they're NFL, quality players. They've got to do something there. And I think Riley Cooper, he might have good blocking ability. They may not be targeting him, but it's time for him to go, too.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, now, maybe since this thing happened today, maybe we can get Andy Talley to coach this team.
yeah, he's
there
available.
There you go.
I have to comment on that because I love this guy. And, I did the analyst work for Villanova football this year, and I got to see him in action with his coaching staff. And now I know why he's been successful for 32 years. Is because he is the epitome of what I just talked about. He cares about the people around him. He cares about his coaches. He was very, very, close to everything that was going on. Villanova did not really come out and put a lot of money into the stadium or the program. And a lot of times, he was making chicken salad out of you know what. The guy did a great job with that. And then on top of that, he's a good human being. He starts this UB the Match program for bone marrow transfers, and they've saved over 200 people's lives doing that. And I said, Coach, I think at the end of this program, you're going to have more lives saved than victories, and that wouldn't be the worst thing to be remembered by. Mm-hmm. But we're going to miss him, and I think he's done a tremendous job there with a program that, went away in 1980, and I fought like heck with a lot of other alumni to get it back. I didn't know what an Andy Talley was when they hired him, but I sure know what it is now. And we just wish him the best of luck, and he's got one more year next year before he heads out to do whatever he wants to do.
Yeah, he'll surely be missed. But hey, I wanted to ask you, Kevin, while we have a second, Hall of Fame, NFL Pro Football Hall of Fame coming up. Terrell Owens is on the ballot as a finalist. He a Hall of Famer?
Wow, he's right there. He is right there, and I'll tell you, if I had to do the tipping point, I would just say that when he wanted to dominate, he could. And, you know, there's not a whole lot of people that you can say in the NFL that when they turn on that extra gear that they can dominate like he did. Just never forget the first exhibition game or preseason game that he played in, that the third play, Donovan threw one about 80 yards to him for a touchdown. And he was just going to make it happen, and I saw him do that a lot. And in the Super Bowl, you know, he wasn't up to par, and he played very hard. I think he had like 11 or 12 catches. And when he wanted to do the right thing, the guy was a heck of an athlete. I don't know. I don't have his numbers in front of me. I don't know how they stack up against other, you know, Pro Bowlers. But if you take his antics out of it, he certainly had the talent and probably the pedigree to be a Hall of Famer.
Agreed.
I was going to make it a little harder on you because the only other wide receiver that's a finalist is Philly's own Marvin Harrison. So you get to pick one.
Wow. Man, that's tough.
Yeah, they're the only wide receivers in the final as the finalists.
That's a tough pick right there. I might have to flip a coin.
Yeah, both certainly good. We'll see. It'd be interesting to see how that all plays out. And, you know, like you say, Owens just absolutely really could be a great player. But there's so much off-the-field stuff and other stuff that I think it's got to affect his chances.
Yeah, and I agree with you guys.
Hey, Kevin, one other big news item this week. Los Angeles hasn't had a pro football team in 20-plus years. Now the Rams are moving back there from St. Louis, and the Chargers may be joining them in the City of Angels. How the heck can L.A. go from zero teams to two?
I don't know how they'll support them. I looked at that today. You guys ever been out there on a Sunday in the fall?
No.
Just this year. It was this year. Crazy.
I was at I'm trying to think of the name of the beach. It's oh my goodness. Anyway, I was at one of the beaches out there in California on a Sunday afternoon. I had gone out on business, and I was with Howie Long on Saturday to do his prep for his NFL show, and we had a good time. Then Sunday, I went to the beach, and I'm walking on it's a concrete boardwalk, and everybody's out barbecuing, and there must be 150 volleyball games going on. I found out that they were, leagues that go on every Sunday, and the weather's like 80 degrees, and there's no humidity. I'm saying, why does anybody care about football? They don't care about football out there with all the other things to do. And, you know, they've never been able to really draw well, and now they're going to have two football teams. We'll see. I mean, you know, the NFL might be able to bring them in on their own wave, since the NFL is just doing spectacular with, you know, attendance in almost all arenas. And, of course, everybody playing, you know, what do they call it, this football, you know.
The fantasy
football. Fantasy football.
Fantasy football.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
You walk in, I mean, if 40 years ago you walk into a bar, you just wanted to see the two teams that you're rooting for. Now you walk in, they got names underneath of them. This game comes on at this time because everybody's got a little bit of input trying to win their fantasy football or a couple bucks. So, crazy
situation.
Yep.
Hey,
the
Kevin, NFL I wanted
was
down
to ask
here
you. In Delaware a couple years ago fighting the lottery. And I'm thinking, boy, you talk about hypocrisy. The betting in the NFL has doubled everything about the revenue stream that goes in the NFL, and they're down here fighting it because they think it'll wreck the sport. It's already happening, and it's behind the scenes, and it's going on a weekly basis.
Absolutely. Hey, I wanted to ask you, because I know you're just a diehard football fan altogether, what did you think of Alabama and Clemson putting on a show for the national championship? Perfect closeout to a fantastic college football season, I thought.
Wait, was that a shot in the arm for college football or what?
Yeah, great game.
I've got a godson and a stepson that both go to Alabama right now. So, and I got down there to visit the campus for the first time this March, and I got to tell you, I thought we had a great campus at Villanova, but Alabama's campus makes Villanova look like my grade school. The fantastic campus they have and the passion they have for the sports down there. I was not at a game last year where they played Auburn, but my brother-in-law went down and I said, what is it like down there? And he said, well, 90,000 of the 100,000 fans cheer as if their son's playing. I said, that's all I can tell you. And I just thought it was a great football game. I love the Clemson quarterback. Can't wait for him to get an inch taller and maybe put on 10 pounds because he looks like a real winner to me, you know, coming out of Clemson and possibly playing in the NFL. But that was a tremendous football game. And one that's going to really, you know, I watched the whole thing. I don't know about you guys, but it was just a great game to watch.
Yep. It was. Hey, Kevin, before we let you go, I just want to play one quick game of three and out with you, three quick hitters for you, okay?
Okay.
Here we go. On a percentage basis, what's the likelihood the Eagles use their first-round pick on an offensive lineman?
50%.
50? Wow. I would have said 90. Number two, Bill Belichick widely considered the best coach in the NFL. Who's the second best head coach?
Wow, second best in coaching in the NFL. Boy, you hit me right between the eyes with that. I got to say the guy out in Green Bay.
All right.
That's who I was going to say.
And number three, about 3.5 weeks from today, Super Bowl 50. Who wins it?
The Carolina Panthers.
There you go. We shall see.
Yeah, they're going to have their hands full this week.
Yeah. Guys, it's
Seattle.
Was great joining
Seattle
you
coming
again.
Is going to be good.
Thank you, Kevin.
And, you know, I got to put a plug in here. June 21st of this year, we're going to have the 24th annual Dick Vermeil Golf Tournament that will be benefiting the Boy Scouts of Chester County. And I want to make sure that I give you guys right now a verbal invitation to come out. We will have 40 to 45 celebrities out there. A lot of guys from the old Eagles team that, you know, that I played with down the line. Jerry Sizemore, Bill Bradley, Roman Gabriel will be coming in. We're having it at Ron Jaworski's Downingtown Country Club, and it is a party. So I'm putting out an invitation to you two guys on the air, and you'll get one formally. Please come out. It's an interview smorgasbord.
And what's that date again?
Yeah, there you go.
June 21st. It's a Tuesday.
I'm marking my calendar.
June 21st, Tuesday.
I got it. Thank you, Kevin.
All right, Kevin. We appreciate
Bye,
it.
Guys.
And thanks for stopping by as always.
All right, buddy. Bye.
Take care.
Okay. All right, Chet. Hey, boy, Kevin. Kevin always has good stuff. Always great insight.
He's great.
And he really is. And he's you know, one of the things I like about him, as well as a bunch of the other guys we have, passionate fan. He's a football fan. He wants the Eagles to
he
win
is
the
indeed.
Super Bowl.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, hey, it's trivia time. And for the first correct answer, tonight wins an 8x10 color photo of Invincible. Vince Papale, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that calls in and correctly answers our trivia question. We'll get to Vince a little later on, Chet. We'll talk about your visit to Carl's Cards and get to chat with Vince. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer the trivia question, 929-477-2855. Okay, Chet, and, you know, last week we gave a Flyers question to win an Eagles picture. Well, Vince Papale is an Eagle, but Vince Papale is a winner any sport you pick. So we're going back to the Flyers again tonight since it's January and it's hockey season. So here's your question, Mr. Chesko, and any other
easy
listener
one.
That wants to win.
Easy
this
one.
This is an easy one? Okay.
Yep.
In the 1984-85 and 85-86 seasons, the Flyers had back-to-back franchise record 53-win seasons, losing the Stanley Cup Finals the first year and losing in the division finals the next year. Who was the Flyers coach at that time? All right, our shop
That's
for
a
kisses.
Softball.
Is that a softball? Okay.
That's
our
an
shop
easy.
For
you
kisses
got it.
Phone line 929-477-2855. Okay, 84-85, 85-86, back-to-back 53-win seasons. Who was the coach of the Flyers? Mm-hmm. Okay, let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase paid gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer at the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Okay, Chet, speaking of the Flyers and the record-breaking season, what about the 2015-16 version? Not playing bad hockey. As we mentioned early on in the lead, Shane Gostisbehere missed his first game, going to miss another one here tonight. They're not playing bad, but they're not picking up a lot of ground.
Yeah, I think there's still 4 points maybe out of that final playoff spot. A big one tonight, though, as we speak. They're playing the Bruins, and that's the team who they are 4 points behind. So it'll be nice to win this one for sure. It's a shame that Gostisbehere won't be there. It sounds like he's going to be ready for this Saturday's game. I think they play the Rangers on Saturday, so hopefully they will have him back by then. Yeah, you got to win some of these crucial head-to-head battles with the teams that are just ahead of you, that's for sure. I'd also like to see Jake Voracek scoring a little more than he is. I mean, right now, he's got only 4 more goals than you and I do, so he's got to pick up the pace a little more. Going to be an interesting second half, though. They got the 2 goaltenders who are both getting a lot of playing time. Claude Giroux just celebrated his 28th birthday yesterday. He's been off and on this year. I'd like to see him pick it up a little bit. Fortunately, they are getting some decent scoring out of their other lines, which is great to see. I think they're going to be in it all year. I don't know for sure that they're going to make the playoffs or going to sneak in, but I think they're going to be in the hunt right up until the final week of the season.
Yeah, I think so, too. And you know, one guy who's playing pretty well right now, at least offensively, he's always good defensively, Sean Couturier. So
yeah.
He's got 9 goals. You know, he's up to 20 points, which is a lot of points for him. But maybe at the age of 23, he seems like he's been around forever to only be 23 years old. But maybe the offense is starting to click in and he's going to become that two-way centerman that everybody thought he was going to be.
Yeah, he was considered a defensive specialist for the first 2 years in the league, but he has definitely picked it up this year, and that is great to see.
Yeah, you know, I think the other, and we talked about this back a couple of weeks ago, but the thing that I think is going to have to come to a head pretty soon is you have Steve Mason at 9-10-5 with a 2.72 goals against, and you have Michael Neuwirth at 9-5-2 with a 2.12 goals against. At some point, something might have to give. You know, I know they're trying to give them both plenty of work. Mason, I guess, is certainly still the number one, but 2.12 goals against and you're 9-5, you might be getting some more playing time.
Yeah, well, Mason had a couple of real bad games where he got shelled, and that hurt his goals against average. But Neuwirth's been pretty consistent all year, and that's why he's got the nice goals against average. He's also got a much higher save percentage. So, I mean, if you're just looking at who's played better, it's Neuwirth. And at some point, like you said, something's going to have to give, and they're going to have to decide who's going to be the number one guy, because you just don't see teams play 2 goalies once you get to playoff time.
Right, absolutely. Well, we'll see what happens. You know, I think as the winter rolls in and hockey's going to pick up, they're playing good. I think we're gonna start getting a lot more attention on hockey, and maybe once this coaching search is over. But as Kevin said, it's a 12-month deal with the Eagles. But certainly, I'm a diehard Flyer fan.
Hey, I didn't get to mention this last week when we had Carl Henderson on, who's an even bigger hockey fan than you and me. Did you see who is an all-star this year and who's leading the Florida Panthers in scoring this year? Any idea?
I did not.
Well, let me tell you. It's a guy by the name of Jaromir Jagr, okay, who's got 15 goals and 17 assists, 32 points. He's as old as you and me, Bill. No, not quite. He's 43 years old, but it seems like he's been around forever. How does this guy keep going?
He's just absolutely a machine, you know. And why we let him go, geez, that seems like forever ago. And he's been to three or four teams since then and been great. You know, here's a guy, he's on a 30-goal pace.
Yeah, he's played for just about every team in the league, I think.
Yeah, and you know, the other one I just saw the other day, that got hurt. James Van Riemsdyk, also with 12 goals and 13 assists, but he got injured the other day. But I did notice that he was he was leading in scoring as well. Well, hey, Jed, I think we have an answer to our trivia question, I hope. Let's see who we got on the line.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Hello.
Hey, how are you? Who's this?
This is Adam. How are you all doing?
Hey,
Adam.
Hey, Adam. How's it going, bud?
Enjoying this cool breeze.
Yeah, we got a little cool air down here in the sunshine. It's almost like winter.
So can I talk to you about cool air? Do you know it was a wind chill of 6 this morning? I'm up here in New Jersey. 6.
Well, yeah, my brother's in New Jersey, too, and he called yelling at me this morning.
Well, I'll tell you what, Florida.
It was 43 in the sunshine today. It was a little chilly.
I'll take that.
Hey, Adam, you have an answer to our... You have an answer to our trivia question tonight? Go ahead.
Mike Keenan
is the answer. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
Yep. You would be the winner of the Vince Papale Invincible 8x10 color photo courtesy of Carl's Cards.
That's a nice one.
Absolutely. I got a nice centerpiece for that one to go up on.
Very good.
Congratulations, Adam.
Very good. All right, Adam.
Maybe one day I could be like Bill.
We'll see.
All right, gentlemen, thank you for doing the show. We appreciate it.
All right, thank you, Adam.
All right, appreciate it, Adam. All right. Hey, good answer, good win. All right, hey, Chet, speaking of Florida, speaking about it being 43 degrees this morning in the sunshine, the Phillies are in town here. It's only 5 weeks away to start spring training. Do you have any optimism for what's going to happen here with the Fightins?
Yeah, 5 weeks from today, they report. I'm not going to say optimism, but I do have a level of excitement. I just want to see how these young guys, you know, look out there, especially the pitchers. You got Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, the new guy, Vincent Velasquez, some of the other guys that they picked up. I think the bullpen is going to be a big disaster, but some of these young starters could surprise us and be impressive right away or not, but it's going to be fun to watch. It's going to be fun to watch them develop in spring training, going to, you know, watch them over the course of the year and see how they adapt, see how they handle pressure, see how they handle taking a few beatings, which they will along the way. As far as the position players, again, there's, you know, a lot of battles. We don't know who's going to be in the outfield. It's just a different era now. Other than Ryan Howard, it's pretty much a whole new team compared to a couple of years ago. You want to see Franco develop. So there's a level of excitement. I'm not going to say optimism, but I am very curious to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, and don't forget Chooch. Chooch is still around, too.
Chooch is still there.
He's still around. And, you know, the one I want to see, of course I want to see them all, but the one I think will be interesting to see is my buddy Freddie. You know,
Freddie Galvis.
Freddie Galvis, and as I ate my crow last year, as Freddie ended up hitting 263, which was about 30 or 40 points higher than I thought he would. But Freddie played pretty well. I believe he had like a real close to 150 hits, like 147 hits. But, you know, it almost sounded like early on that they were wanting to make a deal for a shortstop and Freddie wasn't going to be their guy. So, but he's still here. He still is the guy, at least it looks like right now. So, to me, it's going to be interesting to see if he is the guy, along with Franco and Cesar Hernandez, if he's going to be, if that's the infield we're going to look at starting the season. I think that will be interesting to watch. Of course, you know, are you going to go with Ryan Howard? Are you going to go with Darren Ruff or some combination there? So not big names, certainly, but we'll see what happens.
And then you got Crawford waiting in the wings, of course, at shortstop, and then some of the young outfielders, including the ones that they got in the deals last year in July and August, like Nick Williams. You know, will Nick Williams be up at some point during the year? I think it's going to be a fun team to watch. They may not win a whole lot. They may challenge that 99 losses of last year's team, but I think there's going to be a little more fun atmosphere rather than last year when it was just everybody waiting for Ruben Amaro to get fired.
Well, and too, I think them. You never know, there could be some deals made too. You know,
sure.
A guy like Odubel Herrera, he's now Cody Ashe. Those guys could go somewhere if they could bring something back. If you have a guy like Nick Williams or Roman Quinn or out there, Aaron out there played pretty well when he was up. You know, if those guys are ready to go, then you got a crowded. You know, and I like Herrera. I think Herrera's got a chance to be a superstar. But you know, somebody's going to go if it gets crowded. But they're all young kids, and of course, as you mentioned, some of them young arms. They're going to be fun to watch if they can stay healthy, which seems to have been everybody's problem.
Mm-hmm. I'll be watching.
Well, I'll be watching too, and actually, I'll be watching sooner than you. But I will personally invite you, your second invite tonight, to come down and watch a little spring training.
You know, I actually may try to do that. We have to talk because I talked to my wife about that just the other day. She said, "Yeah, go if you want to go." So I said, "Hmm."
There you go.
I'm gonna come down and see you.
There you go. Hey, we'll get a couple of the boys together. Adam will be here. He's always good for going to a game. And the 18th of February they start out. And let's see, first game in the spring training is Tuesday, March the 1st.
All right,
Blue Jays. All right, sounds good. Well, hey, we might as well cover them all. Let's talk quickly about your 76ers with four wins.
Yeah, I'm not worried about the wins. I just want to see guys develop. And, you know, we talked about Ish Smith quite a bit the last couple of weeks, what he's brought to the team. He's looking good. I've also liked what I'm seeing from a couple other guys, Jeremy Grant of late, and Carl Landry, the veteran that they brought in, who's finally active. He's played 8 games. He contributes. He's averaging 9 points a game, and he's a banger. He's an inside guy, but he's shooting 58%. I've liked what I've seen from him. And then the rookie, Rashawn Holmes, looks like he's going to be a player as well. So there's optimism. And then today, Jerry Colangelo came out, and he said he thinks the turnaround is going to be a lot quicker than people think. He's, you know, hoping for Joel Embiid recovery, of course, which we all are. That would really speed up the process. And then you have Saric, supposedly, coming over this summer. And you have the June draft, when you should have at least a couple of decent, high-quality picks coming your way. So he's thinking the turnaround could come very soon, and that this year, 2016, is a key. And he's absolutely right. So, you know, I'm saying next year they are going to be very, very fun to watch and very competitive.
Well, I sure hope you're right. But, hey, I wanted to ask you, I saw an article the other day, and, you know, I always hate those things that come from unnamed sources, you know, because you just never know what in the world you're looking at or whatever. But the article basically said that Nerlens Noel and Jahlil Okafor cannot play together. Somebody's going to have to go. Now, you've been watching them a little bit.
I have.
Your thoughts?
And there's a lot of truth to that. To be honest, they're a better team when only one of them is on the court at the same time, because they're both, you know, in the paint kind of players. I think Noel is more a center than a power forward, and so is Okafor. So I'm going to say that Noel is probably going to be traded at some point. That's just a guess. That's nothing definite. But, I mean, especially if you're going to get Joel Embiid back next year and he's healthy, then it gets really crowded at that center position, the number 5 and 4 position, when you got 3 big guys who are all like 6'11", 7 foot, 7 foot two, something's going to give at that point. But yeah, I agree. They don't look that great playing together a lot. Noel is a great defender. Okafor is not. Okafor brings more offense to the table. Noel, not so much. So, I mean, that's a problem for Brett Brown. He's trying to figure it all out, but it ain't easy sometimes.
It's going to be interesting. You start taking these number one guys, and then you start moving them, and who do you get to replace the guy who was your number one or number two or number three pick in the draft, and now all of a sudden you're moving them, and are you going to get anything of equal value in its place, or did they, or are they a missed pick? You know what I mean? It's a tough, very tough situation to be in. But hey, speaking of Jaromir Jagr being almost as old as you, how about Elton Brand?
Yeah, Elton 39 Brand. Years old, back with the Sixers. How about that? He hasn't played yet, I don't think. But yeah.
No, not yet.
Yeah,
he's
more of a guy who's just there as a mentor and, you know, maybe to hold some of the young guys' hands. But it'll be interesting to see if he can contribute at all. So that'll be something else to watch.
Yeah, absolutely. That puts the end to the youth movement when you bring in guys like that.
Yeah.
Let's get an update to the signings of Carl's Cards and Collectibles. Eagles Hall of Famers Pete Retzlaff and Maxi Bond will be in the store January 16th. Great autographs to get for any Eagles fans. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give Carl a call, 610-789-4996. You can also visit his website, carlscards.com, or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. Jed, I know you went to Carl's Cards last weekend. You met our buddy Vince Papale, and Carl told me that Vince was just an amazing guest. There was a great turnout, and Vince was just fantastic with everyone.
Yeah, not surprising. Vince is great, very personable. And, yeah, I was able to make it into Carl's just before they wrapped things up at 3 o'clock. I got there in time to say hello to Vince and to Carl, get my little photo op. And, by the way, Bill, you and I need to hit the gym or something. Vince is going to be 70 next month, and he looks younger than you and me somehow.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. Maybe Vince does have time to hit the gym, but yep. He does look great. He does look great.
He does.
Yeah. You know, and the thing I took from my conversation with Carl as much as anything was his comment that, Vince did everything he could, passing the message on to everybody that came in and all the kids about, you know, being invincible. You know, you mm-hmm. can do it. You can do anything. And that's cool.
Positive thinking.
Absolutely. Hey, speaking of positive thinking, I believe I was 3-1 last weekend after taking my long shot on the Deadskins, who got Aaron Rodgers to death. That didn't work out so well. How'd you do on your picks?
Well, you lost only on the Redskins. I was also 3-1. I got Green Bay right, but the Bengals coughed up that game against the Steelers, where I would have been perfect. So, yeah, I was 3-1 as well.
Boy, what a meltdown by the Bengals. Holy cow.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, this week we have Kansas City at New England, Green Bay at Arizona. Well, they're the Saturday games. Sunday, Seattle at Carolina, Pittsburgh at Denver. Who you have?
And by the way, we both got lucky on Seattle, of course, on Sunday when Minnesota's kicker shanked that 27-yarder. Anyway, the sure things for me this weekend, Arizona over Green Bay. I think the Cardinals are just too good this year. The Packers aren't going to play well again this week, especially not in Arizona. Arizona wins that one. Denver takes care of Pittsburgh, especially given Roethlisberger being injured as well as Brown. Big Ben is probably going to play, but he's certainly not going to be 100%. So I'm going to take Arizona. I'm going to take Denver. The other two, though, are real tough. I will say Carolina holds off Seattle, and while I'd love to see the Chiefs go to Foxborough and upset the Patriots, with Tom Brady, and his team coming off a week layoff, they're rested up, and they're at home. I just don't see it. So the Patriots will beat the Chiefs. What do you think?
Well, I think I'm going to very reluctantly take New England because I can't go against Tom Brady.
Right.
But I really want Kansas City to win that game.
If they didn't have
that week off and weren't able to recover maybe some of these injuries, I'd go the other way. But I'm going to go New England. I'm going to go Arizona. But boy, I hate to go against Aaron Rodgers 2 weeks in a row. He's good.
Yeah.
I'm going to go Carolina because they're just good. And I'm going to go out on a crazy limb, and I'm going to not ever bet against Ben Roethlisberger.
All right. You're taking the Steelers.
I'm taking the Steelers. If he can play, I'm taking them. Obviously, if he doesn't play or he can't go far, I'm going to go with the Steelers.
Understood.
Okay. All right. We talked about the national championship game, and with no need to talk too much more about that other than for Nick Saban, you know, that's five national championships, and what a gutsy move on the onside kick call that probably won his team the national championship. Great move on his part, especially when it worked.
Yeah, as we discussed with Kevin, it was really an entertaining game from start to finish. And, yeah, trying an onside kick in a 24-all game at that point, you know, that was really gutsy. But the pooch kick was perfect, and it helped set up the go-ahead touchdown that helped Bama to its fourth title in 7 years. Boy, that's a good team. And we thought it was going to be more of a defensive battle, but there were a lot of points, and it was exciting, a lot of fun to watch.
Yeah, and you know, and the defenses still played good. Those are really, really good defenses. It gave up about 1,000 yards in offense.
Yeah.
You know, and special teams, kick returns, as we talked, the onside kick. There was a blocked field goal or a deflected field goal. I mean, all kinds of just great, great football. And some fantastic players out on that field, athletes everywhere.
Yep, a fun football season for sure.
All right. Well, hey, Chet, we put this off a few weeks because we've just been pushed for time, but now we are free, and it is time for you to give your New Year's party shot.
That's right. A few quick New Year's resolutions for some of our local sports folks. Now, for Joel Embiid, I will continue to diligently rehab. I will lay off the Shirley Temples, and I will take the court as the Sixers opening night center next October. For Sam Hinkie, I will find a way to rig the NBA lottery to make sure the ping pong balls give the Sixers the number one overall pick. We will then draft LSU's Ben Simmons or Duke's Brandon Ingram, and with Embiid ready to play finally, and Saric, we'll start once and for all to get this thing going in the right direction. For Aaron Nola, Jared Eichhoff, and Vincent Velasquez, we will take the mound for the Phillies every fifth day. And we'll take some lumps along the way, but we'll learn from our experience in hopes of helping this team contend again by 2018. For Ruben Amaro, I resolve to be the best first base coach the Red Sox have ever had. And for Jeffrey Lurie, I will never again fall for a pitch from a snake oil salesman and absolutely never, ever give an Eagles head coach total control of personnel. There you go.
I can't top that. But, hey, I just got a message actually from our buddy Carl Henderson at Carl's Cards, and he tells me that my boy, Freddie Galvez, signed a $2 million deal today to avoid arbitration.
There you go. Freddie is the man.
That's like a train robbery right there.
Well,
he must have like one of those bandanas over his face.
Hey, come on. $2 million is nothing in this day and age.
That's like a daggum robbery. Are you kidding me? Oh, jeez. I must have a chance of winning that lottery tonight, Chet. By the way,
wouldn't that be nice?
Donate?
Yeah, I contributed. A bunch of people at the office went in together. So I think I have maybe a share in about 20 tickets or so. So it would be nice. It would be nice.
There you go. Well, there's plenty to go around at the kind of money that somebody's going to win.
Yeah.
All right. Well, hey, we're at the top of the hour. Let's go ahead. We'll wrap it up and thank our special guest, Kevin Riley, for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes. Our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chechesco, this is Bill Furman. Please join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, January 20th at 7 p.m. You can listen through our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And now on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.
Gene Hart, good night, good hockey.